Welcome to the Freedom Hut. This is the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. The top stories of the day from the Buck Sexton Show. For more Buck, head to BuckSexton.com and remember to subscribe to the podcast.
Welcome, friends, to the Buck Sexton Show. An honor and a privilege to have you here with me. Thank you so much for joining. I'm so pleased that I get this opportunity to tell you all to get ready for it. Oh, my. Things are going to get even more out of control than I anticipated. And I've been thinking all along that this is going to get so ugly. This is going to get so intense that it's hard to wrap your head around it in advance. Like, you're going to have to experience what this last stretch of 2020 before the election feels like to really know, because Democrats, they're already so insane about this. They already act like the world's going to end if Trump wins. And now on top of it, we have the momentous report of Ruth Bader Ginsburg over the weekend. It just came in on Friday evening. That Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the biggest name in liberal jurisprudence, had passed away due to complications from cancer. So now you've got, let's just review for a moment. You have COVID-19, you have a pandemic, and now it looks like Europe is terrified. They're going to have a whole second wave, which means America's going to be terrified. Oh, I thought if we just wore masks, we'd be okay, right? I mean, this is what people say. But anyway, we have the COVID pandemic going on. We have months of riots and BLM and racial tension. We have an economy that's trying to recover, but is clearly under a lot of pressure because of all these other factors. You've got an election coming up here where the incumbent president is the most hated Republican of my lifetime. By the libs, obviously, by the left. And you're going to throw not just a Supreme Court seat into the mix. We've got the single most beloved left-wing liberal on the Supreme Court, perhaps in history, one for whom there has been a longstanding cult. There's a veneration of RBG that goes far beyond just what you'd expect for a Supreme Court justice. The libs absolutely love Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And now that seat is open. So you really couldn't have more tension in this political moment than you currently do. I don't know how it could honestly come close to this. This is unprecedented. I mean, you couldn't write the script for this. And as I described it over the weekend on Twitter, it feels as though there's going to be a level of crazy here achieved that is beyond our conception for what is possible. I mean, the Democrats will do things that will even still surprise you, despite the fact that we all recognize that they're willing to do almost anything if it will help their chances to defeat Donald Trump. They're willing to run a special counsel based on fabrications and lies. They're willing to do an impeachment that no one even really remembers what it was about, and no one even knew in the first place what it was. It was really just the Orange Man bad impeachment process. And yet, I think that they're going to surprise us now. They're going to come up with a new level of crazy. As I described it on Twitter, it's as though we're going to be injecting methamphetamine into a rabid squirrel. What does that even look like? I don't know. We're going to find out. This is going to be a whole other level. We will not have seen, I think, anything like this in modern American politics. And right now is the calm before the storm, although we are in the heat of the election cycle, on replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg, on filling the seat. It's not her seat. We need to be careful about how we discuss this. No Supreme Court justice owns or has some special claim to the seat that he or she once held. This seat belongs to the people of the United States. And it is the duty of the United States Senate to confirm a nominee put forward by the President of the United States. We know what the constitutional order demands here. And you're going to hear so many lies about this, and you already are. You're going to hear just sheer desperation from these libs, from these Democrats. anything to stop this seat from being filled. We already know two Republican senators, one from Maine, one from Alaska, Murkowski and Collins, or Collins and Murkowski, respectively, are basically saying that they are out, that they will have no part of this, which is appalling but not surprising. You know, these are people who are careerists, and they're going to do what they think they have to get reelected, although not going forward with the Kavanaugh nomination cost a number of senators, and it was a good thing in a sense that it did. I know I wish we had more Republicans, but they weren't real Republicans. It cost a number of Republicans their seats, the vote. It cost a number of Democrats, rather, their seats against Kavanaugh, by voting against Kavanaugh. You know, there were Democrats who learned that lesson the hard way. And that's, I think it's a good thing. I'm glad to see that that's how it occurred. But now, I mean, the stuff that they're saying, it's just pathetic. We'll go through this because remember Kavanaugh? Don't ever forget that. Don't forget what they did. Don't forget that they were willing to lie about a man in front of his wife and children and millions of Americans in the United States Congress to just smear him with the most disgusting, obvious lies. It was the most politically grotesque thing I've ever witnessed in the United States Senate. And they're not ashamed of it at all now. There's been no apology. They didn't say, we're sorry about the excesses of our efforts to destroy Kavanaugh. Their only problem with what happened in the Kavanaugh era, the only thing about the Kavanaugh situation the Democrats regret, is that it was unsuccessful. They would redo it, and they would try to go even more disgusting and in the gutter to take him down, because they've been given these victories, and it's part of the left-wing approach to jurisprudence, is that people who are judges, it's just the will to power, right? It's the mob mentality. I want this thing, therefore how do I get this thing? It doesn't matter if it violates sacred laws, natural law, principle, it doesn't matter. I want it, so I'm going to get it. I'm going to find a way to do it. That's what Democrats do. That's how they think. And that was what they were thinking with Kavanaugh. We don't want this guy to get in the way of our super legislature, that is the Supreme Court, that hands them things that they would not be able to get through legislation. And then they have the entire media and academic apparatus to claim that, oh, this is now settled law. Well, yeah, all Supreme Court decisions are settled until they're not, right? All Supreme Court decisions are settled until they're overturned again. But those commonalities, those areas of agreement around the most fundamental issues of jurisprudence and rule of law, they're evaporating with every passing day. Democrats want what they want, and they want it as soon as they can get it. And nothing else can be allowed to intrude on that. Their will to power, their lust for control of you, and to be able to enforce themselves, inflict their will upon you, outranks all these other considerations that we may have for our institutions or the rule of law or the Constitution. And we're going to see that now in a way that is hard for me to describe to you. I don't know where there is. I don't think it's possible to go lower than they did on Kavanaugh and to be more debased and honestly evil. But they're going to, if they can. They're going to. But before I get to what I expect in the tactics and what they're going to do during a hearing, and let me also just say, I don't think there should be a hearing. Vote. These hearings are a joke. It's just partisan grandstanding, and people know what they're going to say. They should just vote. Do it. Get it done. They absolutely have no choice here. The Senate Republicans, if they think that they're not going to implode the Republican Party by delaying this until after the election, they're out of their minds. Although I do think Cocaine Mitch knows what the stakes are here. And on judges, Mitch McConnell, say what you will about him being a crony capitalist friend and weak on immigration. There's a lot of stuff you could say. Mitch McConnell on judges, this guy's been a machine. A lean, mean confirmation machine. And he's saying this is going to happen. And he said Kavanaugh was going to happen, and he kept his word. Now, there are some other concerns we have here. You know, other weaker members of the herd, so to speak, among the Republicans. I mean, I think Mitt Romney is likely to make Benedict Arnold look like a team player when all is said and done here, unfortunately. But you can lose Murkowski, Collins, Romney, and still win. Right? You can have a 50-50 tie broken by the vice president. You can still do that. That'll work. But they're going to come up with ways to pressure Republicans that are so underhanded and so vile that I worry about this. That's why I think the delay process is the delay of this process is a mistake. I would have named the person today, and I would have said, let's hold the vote within 72 hours. I mean, let's go. Let's get it done right now. Right now. You want to talk about energizing the base? Get it done. Promises made, promises kept. Now, the president's saying he's going to do it Friday or Saturday. And maybe that's maybe he's seeing things I'm not. Maybe that's the right move. I'm just telling you, I think it should have been done right away. We don't have to go through some mourning period. It's not the Ruth Bader Ginsburg seat. She was, and rest in peace. And we don't, you know, we are civil here, and there's nothing to be said about Ruth Bader Ginsburg right now other than she led a remarkable life, and our thoughts and prayers are with her family. But it's not her seat. We're not in some national period of mourning where we're not allowed to do any government business. That's not reality. We should fill this seat as soon as possible with the most conservative, qualified constitutionalist we possibly can. And I do believe that's Amy Coney Barrett. I think that's the move. It has to get done. And this is really a test of will now. This is a test of whether the Republican Party is serious at its core about its ultimate promises to the base, to its voters, and to the American people. This must get done. No retreat, no surrender, right? I mean, if you want to go Cobra Kai, this is strike first, strike hard, no mercy. That's the situation we're in here. Get this done, Republicans. Get it done. There is no other way. There's no other conversation. We need a conservative constitutionalist on the court. It is owed to the American people. It is owed to those who have been voting for Republicans for decades. Get it done.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Buck Daily podcast. Get more from Buck by following him on social media at Buck Sexton on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget to visit BuckSexton.com.
Tonight, Mitch McConnell publicly, the night of her passing, he couldn't wait 24 hours, issued a statement saying that he was going to give Trump a vote in violation of her dying wish. People can say how appalling, people could say this is horrible, etc. But we know who this man is. We know who this man is. This is a man who does not care about a dying woman's final wish. Clearly,
if Mitch McConnell is not going to honor RBG's final wish, we will, and we have to.
Break out the world's smallest violin here for AOC. Her dying wish. It's like a wish that's made. It's so no, that's not in the Constitution. We give zero bleeps given about anyone's dying wish about a Supreme Court seat. Do not care. There are 330 million people in this country. I could not give a crap less about what RBG's last wish is. Okay? As I said, respect to her and her family and their period of mourning. But this is about American politics now. I don't care. And let's not even pretend. But notice just how pathetic and whiny this is. Oh, it's her last wish. We don't care. What is it, like a joke? You think that's going to stop anybody from moving forward with their constitutional duty? Unbelievable. But the Democrats haven't yet figured out what their approach is going to be. And this is, you're seeing in real time the truth of who the Democrats are, because they can't decide if their appeal is going to be, oh, the precedent here, the principle should be that you don't fill this seat because out of respect for our institutions, or You know, so respect for norms, that's one way to go. The other side of it would be to say, which is what they're doing, that they're going to completely tear down these norms, that they're going to destroy institutions if they don't get their way. So you've got, you know, some very loud voice of the Democrat Party saying, but what about our sacred democracy? And at the same time, you have other Democrats who are saying, we'll destroy our sacred democracy if we don't get what we want. So they're not sure yet. You know, are they appealing to norms or are they threatening those norms? Well, the truth is they're doing both, which is what we should all understand is actually going on here. Look, this is not complicated. I mean, they're going to make it complicated as much as they can, and they're going to try to muddy the waters, and they're going to scream and cry and, you know, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. You're going to see stuff like you've never seen before coming out of Democrats' mouths. And that's saying a lot. But at the end of the day, Republicans can, should, and must fill that Supreme Court vacancy. There is no rule. There is no law. There is nothing that prevents them. And in fact, it is their duty to do so. But I think Democrats are even going to go full Alinsky on this. I believe that they will pull the equivalent of pulling the fire alarm in Congress. I mean, I think that they're going to try to block access. I think that there will be bomb threats against the Capitol from lunatics out there. That's what I think is going to happen. I think that they will go to any length, to any extent, to stop this from occurring before the election and hope that they just wear us down. I mean, that's really my, I think there are going to be threats of violence. I think there will be violence over this. Democrats have made this far, far too important to their sense of their personal identity, as well as the future of this country, without a clear control of the Supreme Court, which, look, the way it worked in the past was we pretended there was a swing vote. It's like pretending journalists are neutral. It's just a lie. The swing vote always went with the libs on big social issues on major cases. Kennedy, the swing voter. That was what happened. And now you have even Kavanaugh, who's, you know, kind of a centrist. You got Roberts, who is effectively on some of the biggest issues, a Democrat appointee, might as well be. And then we return to this whole thing, but the court is not political. That's a lie, obviously, which is why Democrats are constantly crying themselves to sleep about who's on the court. But this is going to get completely insane. I mean, right now, they're just trying to figure out what schemes and ploys they'll use. But my friends, you will never have seen anarchy over the court that the way that you're going to see it in the next few weeks. This is going to be a spectacle that a country going through a pandemic and roiled with rioting for months. I don't know how well we're going to be able to handle this.
You're in the Freedom Hut. This is the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. The top stories of the day from the Buck Sexton Show.
I want to tell you a story that you probably won't hear from the national news media, but it's one that you need to know. It involves BLM, the politics around it, the pandering to the vicious mob that's going on across the country. I mean, I know we have a fantastic radio station in KFAB, Omaha, Nebraska. And this is a story that takes place in Omaha. And it could happen anywhere in the country. It is happening all over the country. We've seen something somewhat similar, though nobody was killed, in St. Louis when a person tried to stand up, a husband and wife, tried to stand up for their safety, the security of their homes, and were lawful gun owners. All of a sudden, the state turned on them, because there are people who have the power of the state that they're supposed to use to protect the law abiding that would prefer to be on the side of the vengeful, rageful, spittle mouth, profane, crazy mob. Right? That's what we see happening. Right? The abdication of responsibility to enforce the law, irrespective of what the political needs of any one person, one politician may be in the moment, and the removal of Second Amendment self-defense rights that comes along with it. And this cannot be allowed to stand. This is appalling. So here's what happened. Last week, a grand jury in Omaha, Nebraska, indicted a white bar owner named Jake Gardner, who shot a black man during protests for, quote, this is according to NPR, racial justice, end quote, in May. So there's video of this, and I watched the video. There is a disagreement outside this guy's bar. There's a mob outside screaming their usual threats. And somebody says this guy, Jake Gardner, the white guy here, has a gun. And 22-year-old James Scurlock, who is black, attacked him. Caused an altercation. Put hands on him, you know, try to wrestle him to the ground. And Gardner shot Scurlock. Now, I don't know how much more straightforward this stuff can be. If somebody has a firearm and you know they have a firearm, even if they don't, but especially if you know someone has a gun, and then your decision is, I'm going to try to attack this person physically, they're going to be thinking, one, I don't want to get attacked, and two, if they knock me out or they just manage to get my firearm, I'm dead. So if you attack a person with a gun without cause, and that person shoots you, that is self-defense. That is morally justified and legally justified. This is a bedrock principle. I mean, this is a foundational in our society. Your right to defend yourself is not subject to, should not be subject to the whims of politicians who have to appeal to a crowd, a mob of crybabies. Right? That's not the way this is supposed to work. So initially, they reviewed the video footage, this video outside the bar, and the Douglas County District Attorney Don Klein said that this was self-defense and released Gardner from custody. So the district attorney said, yeah, I saw the video, guys. This is self-defense, which it clearly is. All right. But you see, Jake Gardner is I believe, a former Marine and a white Trump supporter. And James Scurlock is a black BLM supporter. And the mob does not accept this as an outcome. They do not accept this. So they continue to protest, to organize, to create political pressure. And then the DA, Don Klein, appointed a special prosecutor to review the case. This guy brought in, this is the Pontius Pilate move, right? All right, I'm just going to hand it to somebody else. In that case, hand it to the crowd that called for Barabbas, right? This is what you see happening here. What a coward. And hat tip Ann Coulter for raising this story to national prominence by tweeting out about it yesterday. But what a coward. You see from this guy Klein putting this in the hands of a special prosecutor, then put it before a grand jury. The special prosecutor did, Frederick Franklin. They charged Gardner with four counts: manslaughter, attempted first degree assault, terroristic threats, and use of a firearm in connection with a felony. He faced 95 years in prison for this. 95 years. It's a very long time. Now, if he had pleaded, he might have gotten. But this guy, you know, if he pleaded, maybe it would have been it would have been much less. But here's the problem with pleading. He didn't do anything wrong. All right. I watched the video. I read the accounts, the eyewitness accounts. BLM protesters all, you know, flush with their power, all excited that people have to quake in fear at the very thought of them marching outside their property. We want justice, you know. These BLM protesters, I swear, you know, what they should want is some discipline, a good paying job, and to read a book. But instead, what they want is to threaten people and to form mobs outside their businesses and burn them down and do all these things. So this is a clear cut case of self-defense on video. And you would think that we could all be on the same page about how self-defense is a natural law right, that this is critical to our understanding of living in a civilized society, that you're allowed to defend yourself. And James Scurlock was shot, and that was justified. It was justified. What he did, it's on video, you can see it. If someone did that to me, I would shoot them too. And that was what the initial district attorney, whose only job is to determine whether there's guilt, whether there's a need to bring a case. That was the initial district attorney finding here, that there should not be any criminal charges. And then the politics turned, and then it became untenable. You see, the mob wanted a scalp. The mob wanted a scalp. You have a white Trump supporter shoots a black BLM supporter. Not allowed. Not allowed. Mob can't let that fly. So they demand what they call justice. What they really want is mob justice, which is no justice at all. It's just whatever the angry people making the most noise, making the most threats on the street want at any given moment. That's not justice. Well, tragically, Jake Gardner was found over the weekend about 20 miles from Portland, Oregon, dead. He killed himself. Because he knew that he could not trust the state. He knew that he could not trust his own government in Nebraska. They could not trust that the system would do what was right, because there's so much cowardice out there right now. People are just so afraid, not only of being called racist, they're afraid of not being liked by the people that run around calling everybody racist. You know, the mob formed outside Klein's home in Omaha. They went right for him and they pressured him, and he gave in. He caved. There's no need to assign a special prosecutor to review this. He just wanted to hand it to somebody else who wanted to help get the scalp here. Maybe, help his political aspirations down the line. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, it's just tragic. It's wrong. Jake Gardner's life mattered. And the government let him down. The state of Nebraska let him down. And this is the country that we live in now, where the mob is allowed to threaten you and even physically attack you. And if you have a problem with that, if you take any action to defend you, never mind expecting that the police will intervene. Never mind expecting that the state itself will do what is necessary to protect you and your family and your property. No. If you take that into your own hands, which is your God-given right, a right not even given by the state, then your own government will turn on you. These are dark days, friends. This is something I'm not sure I ever thought we'd have to go through as a country. Self-defense not allowed. You know, you see the situation in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where that young man, Rittenhouse, now I've said it and I stand behind it. I wish he hadn't showed up at that protest. He was in over his head, but doesn't change anything about him defending himself. Guy had a gun in his hand and attacked him. If you attack me with a gun in my hand, I'm going to shoot that person. I'm not going to feel bad. I'm not going to lose a night's sleep. I'm not going to feel bad about it either. You attack somebody with a gun and you get shot, that's on you. This is very basic. This is very straightforward. But in this country right now, you are told that you better obey the demands of the mob. You better live in fear. You better bend the knee. You know, I saw over the weekend more video of these roadblocks, like insurgents do in countries. They set up these roadblocks and they make people on video hold their fist up and say, Black Lives Matter. Can you imagine if MAGA hat wearing Trump supporters were setting up roadblocks and that demanding people either bend the knee or hold up a fist and say the prescribed slogan of their political movement? Can you imagine what the response would be? Democrats wouldn't just call for the National Guard. They'd want, you know, Nancy Pelosi would be on the floor of Congress saying, let's bring back napalm, forget the Geneva Convention. And we know this. We know the double standard is so powerful that you choke on it when you think about it. You think, how could this be? But this case of Jake Gardner in Omaha, this one will stay with us for a while. You're not allowed to defend yourself, folks. Those of you who say, Buck, get out of New York City, get to a place. Really? Nebraska's a red state, my friends. The state of Nebraska failed this man. Took away his God-given rights, and now he took away his own life.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Buck Daily podcast. Get more from Buck by following him on social media at Buck Sexton on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget to visit BuckSexton.com.
So the first reason we're here is for unity, and the second is to honor her legacy, to demand that her last wish be fulfilled by the Senate. She said, "My most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced by until a new president is installed." We believe that. So do the American people. Today, a Reuters poll came out and said 62% of Americans agree with her. So that means that's such a high number, it has to mean that Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all agree that it is only right and it is only fair for us to abide by RBG's last wish, that she be replaced when a new president is installed.
Who cares? I mean, I know Democrats want to play this game of, oh, but we saw a poll and this is her last wish. And we care not at all about her last wish. Zero. There's not even a little tiny part of me that's like, well, it was her last wish, but they're going to keep saying this. They're going to throw everything they've got at the wall and see what sticks here. That's for sure. Senator McCaskill, she's out there saying stuff like this. Play two.
I am so sad about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. When I called my daughter, who's in her 20s, to tell her, she sobbed on the phone. My heart was breaking for her because it struck her so at her core. So, yes, I am sad about Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death. But the other thing I'm sad about over the weekend, Joe, is the death of the United States Senate. That's going to be the book that's written about Mitch McConnell. He's killed the Senate. With this power over principle, as John Meacham said, not only is Donald Trump killing the institutions that lift this country up and make us strong, Mitch McConnell is killing the United States Senate with what he's doing.
She is killing her exaggerations and metaphors here, but what is the principle? I mean, John Meacham's an annoying, smug little lib who just does their bidding over at MSNBC. So I refuse to read anymore. I read his Hamilton book. I refuse to read anything else. What is the principle here? Let's play the game for a second. Okay, libs, what's the principle? The McConnell rule? The McConnell rule is that when the Senate is in the opposition party's hands from the presidency, you wait an election year. But also, that's just one guy's opinion. Man, doesn't really matter. Not binding. That's just politics anyway. So who cares what the McConnell rule is? And this still stays within the McConnell rule. So what is the principle? If you look at history, which the libs are hoping you don't, you'll see there have been plenty, tons of Supreme Court vacancies in an election year that were filled. Happens regularly. Obama tried to fill one with Merrick Garland, and, you know, Democrats lost that round. Sorry, they didn't have the Senate. This is the system of checks and balances we have. That is the principle. What other principle is there? They just keep making this up. What's the principle? Why should we not have Trump appoint someone? And we'll get into who and what I think about all that momentarily. But, you know, what is the reason for this not to happen? They don't have a good answer here. They don't seem able to even come up with it. They just keep changing what the different answers could be. And I'm also going to say this. A 20-year-old adult, or, you know, someone in their 20s who starts sobbing over the death of a Supreme Court justice is emotionally unstable and probably needs some help. That's weird. That's weird. This should not be so important to anyone. These are lawyers who are performing a judicial function. All right. This is not your beloved golden retriever. This is not a family member who means the world to you. This is a Supreme Court justice. That's weird. It's a strange thing to do, but it's a window also into the mentality here. Honestly, it's a window into the widespread mental illness of liberalism today that makes them think things like this, that they should cry, they should scream, they should be nutso over a Supreme Court justice passing away and the prospect that somebody who's not going to just give them what they want is, too much for them to bear. These are people who are not well, folks. I don't know how else to say it other than just to come out and speak the truth on it. They are not well. I mean, here's a woman. This was going viral over the weekend. Some lib. Here's what she said. Play six.
Holy f- you guys! I'm driving in a car, but I just got a notification that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died! Could this year get any worse? Ruth, you just had to make it to 2021!
That's pretty much the Democrats' argument in favor of keeping this seat open until after the election. I also want to be very clear. Do you think they're going to stop their shenanigans? Let's say Trump wins. And they didn't actually install a Supreme Court justice before the election. Do you think then they'd say, okay, Trump gets his pick now? No, of course not. They'd pull out the Kavanaugh playbook. They'd pull out all the stops. Oh, we need to keep the balance of the court. Understand this. When they say keep the balance of the court, they're admitting that it is an explicitly political organism in their minds. They just want it to be political in a certain way. Because if it were not political, then there'd be no need for balance. You would just need constitutionalists, jurists, people that can perform the duties of a Supreme Court justice. It wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. But we know that the whole confirmation process and what they did to Bork and others isn't about qualifications. It's about politics. So they're lying to you about all this. They're going to continue to lie to you about this the whole time. That's their approach to it. They're just going to find ways to dress it up with terms like principle, but really, they're playing their own raw power game. Thank heavens they're just not in a position to ram through whatever they want with the system as we have it. But let's also understand this right now. They've already talked about, on the one hand, they say, respect the system, keep it how it is, don't do anything like this. And meanwhile, this is what the system says, fill it. History, the system, there is no argument against filling this seat that isn't political. There is no argument against filling a seat that isn't political. Okay, it doesn't exist. So everything else they say to you is smoke and mirrors. But beyond that, they're also claiming that there should be some procedural objection to filling the seat while also saying, oh, the norms that we want you to protect now, if you don't do what we say, we will destroy those norms. Here is the dumbest United States Senator, Mazie Hirono, letting everyone know that, yeah, we're going to pack the court if you do this. Play 15.
Are you in favor of trying to expand the numbers of justices on the Supreme Court? Because it's actually not in the Constitution, the number.
So we can change that number. As I say, all of those matters will be on the table when the Democrats take back the Senate. None of those matters will be on the table if we do not take back the Senate. So that is why, even as we are fighting tooth and nail to prevent Mitch McConnell from getting his way, because his entire goal has been to pack the courts with lifetime appointments for young, usually white male judges and justices for life.
So everything's on the table, including court packing. Okay. But I thought we were supposed to respect norms. This is how Democrats always play politics. It's heads, they win, tails, you lose. There's no way to make them happy that doesn't involve doing what they want. No way. And that's why we should completely and utterly ignore them. That's why Senator Ted Cruz here is correct when he says, guess what? We need to do this. And for reasons of the functioning and integrity of the system and of the court, we need to do this. We need to fill the darn seat. Play 3.
20 years ago, I was part of the legal team that litigated Bush versus Gore for George W. Bush. I was a young lawyer then. In fact, I just wrote a book that's coming out in a couple of weeks called One Vote Away, How a Single Supreme Court Seat Can Change History. And one of the chapters there talks about Bush versus Gore. It talks about the epic battle where Al Gore challenged the election results. And for 36 days, the country was held in chaos. Well, if Joe Biden does that again this year and we have an 8-8 court, an equally divided court, 4-4, can't decide anything, that could make this presidential election drag on weeks and months and well into next year. That is an intolerable situation for the country. We need a full court on election day, given the very high likelihood that we're going to see litigation that goes to the court. We need a Supreme Court that can give a definitive answer for the country.
Is there a good response to that, Democrats, that you want to offer up? Senator Cruz, is absolutely correct. A 4-4, could you imagine what the country would be like if there was some issue of, you know, vote counting or mail-in ballot delays or all these things, which Democrats are trying to make the process as messed up as possible so that they either win or they claim the process was messed up. That's their game. That's what they're doing. But imagine what the country is like if by 4-4 decision, we are left with, well, we don't know who technically won this election anymore. We have no higher authority. What are we going to do a redo? A do-over? Think about what that would do to America and the people that are talking about our sacred democracy and protecting us and our norms, and our institutions and all this stuff. That's all just lip service. That's all lies. They don't care about any of that. Who will have power? They use the Supreme Court as a super legislature, and they have for decades. And for the first time now, they face the possibility that that may no longer be the case. They may not have someone there to pretend that there's a right to privacy that mandates abortion in all 50 states and then creates additional special rights on top of that, like in Planned Parenthood v. Casey. They may not have a Supreme Court that decides that a tax is a penalty and a penalty is a tax, depending on what you want to say and when you want to say it, so that you can pretend something is constitutional like Obamacare when it's not, allowing the regulation of inactivity. They may not have, I mean, just go down the list. They may not have that last layer of protection for their whims and their demands, and they can't psychologically process that, which is why they do have people that are having these meltdowns. Well, they have these lib women who are completely freaking out. Why are they freaking out so much? Well, because they've always felt like at the end of the day, especially on women's issues, social issues, affirmative action's gone if you get another conservative on the court. It's racist. It's wrong. It's immoral. It's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. It's not really very complicated. They can do a whole, oh, but what about this? No, it's a violation. It is. And even Sandra Day O'Connor, in a Supreme Court case that unfortunately upheld by 5-4, upheld affirmative action, said, you know, maybe in 15 or 20 years, we won't have to do this anymore. Oh, so a time sensitive law. So it's unequal protection now, but maybe one day we'll. Anyway, there's so many of these areas. And then Democrats will have to wake up with the recognition that they've got to make arguments now about these things. They don't just have the super legislature to, by a 5-4 margin, usually tell them, no, that is the law now. OK, well, that's not going to happen anymore. And they can't process it. They don't know what to do, what to say, other than just to panic, to lie, to cheat, to steal, to threaten. It's going to get so ugly, friends. I can't even really war game out for you how insane they're going to be, because I don't think that a person who loves this country, respects the law, and has any morality or decency could foresee what the Democrats are plotting on this whole thing. That's how much this matters to them.
This is the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. The top stories of the day from the Buck Sexton Show. For more Buck, head to BuckSexton.com and remember to subscribe to the podcast.
What are the Democrats going to do to try to stop this seat from being filled? There's no principled argument. There's no legal argument, but they're going to come up with something. And they will do anything. So now we just have to figure out, well, what would that look like? What are some of the ways in which, I mean, encouraging Democrats to form human chains around the Capitol building. They're going to do stuff like that. Just saying riot, don't allow the Senate to be in session. Do whatever you have to do. That's what I think they're going to do. They're not going to make some grand constitutional argument. There is no grand constitutional argument. There's nothing for them to say here. There's nothing for them. There's no argument to be made. They lost. Elections have consequences. Obama was at least right about that. They lost. Too bad. Deal with it, libs. Deal with it. But they're already raising the specter of this is remarkable. They're already bringing up the possibility of a second impeachment proceeding of the president. They are thinking that they may try a rushed impeachment in the House as a procedural block against the president being able to appoint and then the Senate being able to confirm a Supreme Court nominee. I mean, this is just sabotage. That's all that is. Right now, this is saying, well, if you're not going to shut down your factory when we say so, we're just going to, you know, throw a wrench into the gears. That's what they're really talking about at this point. You want to talk about norm busting? I mean, Nancy Pelosi is just kind of saying, yeah, nice constitutional system you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it. Play nine.
Some have mentioned the possibility, if they try to push through a nominee in a lame duck session, that you and the House could move to impeach President Trump or Attorney General Barr as a way of stalling and preventing the Senate from acting on this nomination.
Well, we have our options. We have arrows in our quiver that I'm not about to discuss right now.
We have options. We have arrows in our quiver. They're already talking about impeachment out there. She didn't shut that down. That would be one way to go. Although their last impeachment was such a farce, you'd think, would they really risk whatever remnants of seriousness they have left based upon that? The answer is yes, they will. They are willing to do that. They are willing to be that absurd, that insane. They're crazy, folks. Absolutely crazy. Jim Jordan's not having any of it. He's like, this is complete nonsense. Play seven.
I don't think the American people like to be threatened. I mean, Jerry Nadler said, if you move forward with this nomination and the Senate is won by the Democrats in the election, that they're going to pack the court. They're going to add six new seats to the court and take it from 9 to 15. Pelosi says today she's going to go with impeachment if they move forward. I don't think the American people like being threatened. I think they like the president of the United States following the law and putting someone on that court who's going to respect the Constitution.
There is no legal objection to this, meaning that there's nothing in statute. There's nothing. This is clear as day. The president has the power. The Senate has the votes. That's it, folks. That's our system. There's nothing else. They can try to blame a blah, 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 talk about something. It's all a distraction. It doesn't mean anything. But they're not going to give up on this because it's so critical to them to maintain what they view as the essential bulwark of their statism, of their left-wing dominance of jurisprudence by having a Supreme Court that they know 9 times out of 10 on the big things is going to go their way. They can't live in a country where that, in their minds, where that's not happening. That's really what they think. That's really their belief on all of this. So then we get into who should it be? Who should it be? I've got to tell you, I think that, and I told the president this when I met with him back in May in the Oval Office. He asked me this, and this I will share with you. This wasn't off the record. I said, look, it should be Amy Coney Barrett. She's completely has the credentials, has the background. She's a mother of, I think, I don't even know how many kids, like about a half dozen or so. She's adopted a couple of children. She's a devout Catholic and she's a woman. So I'm hoping, although I can't guarantee, because who knows how desperate the Democrats are going to get. I'm hoping they don't run the exact same playbook where they claim that Amy Coney Barrett was part of a secret high school gang rape ring. I mean, you know, I don't think they're going to do that, but with Democrats, you never know. You never know, which is also why I think the president should announce right now. I think all the delay does is let Democrats gather random, emotionally disturbed people who once saw Amy Coney Barrett in high school and will now swear under oath she's a deep cover Vatican operative who's plotting to enslave all women. That's what I think. I don't think there's any good reason to hold a hearing over the nominee once President Trump has said who it is. The Senate should vote. That's it. I don't see what the advantage is. And I think it should be Amy Coney Barrett. I've seen Barbara Lagoa has also talked about first generation Cuban American down in Florida. Guys, the base wants ACB. She almost got the nod the last time around. I think that she'll be very solid on these issues, and that's I think the move. I mean, look, I'm seeing people say, if you're just going for the best judge you can get, I mean, you could try like Miguel Estrada, obviously he's one of the smartest legal minds in the country. You know, there are some other options out there, but if you want to get this done. I think that having a woman at least take, because they're going to say, if you put a man forward, they will, without any doubt in my mind, they'll try the Kavanaugh playbook all over again. They'll try the same thing. They'll say, oh, this person is a sexist, and they'll bring someone out who said, oh, he said something once that I didn't, or, you know, I was in college and he got drunk and tried to make out with me and I didn't want it. So he's a rapist. It's like, wait, but he didn't even really touch you, you know, but that doesn't matter. They're going to come up with some lie, some horrible, disgusting lie about an email, you know, and I'm trying to think of what it's going to be with a female, what the approach will be. I mean, I do think that if it is Amy Coney Barrett, the anti-Catholic bigotry is going to be off the charts. I mean, it's just going to be, you're going to see that Catholics who believe in Catholic doctrine, who really believe in it, and aren't like Marxists and Roman collars walking around talking about how we should be open borders. A lot of Jesuits doing that, unfortunately. But Catholics who really believe in the doctrine, especially about being pro-life, they're ridiculed by Democrats. The Democrats think those people are absurd. They think that they're, you know, silly papists or something. They don't think that that's acceptable. And so you will see a lot of nastiness around that. But somehow Democrats are able to convince a lot of blue collar Catholics that the Democrat Party is for them. And I look at this and just say, you know, that's just a product of the media and people not knowing enough about politics, honestly. I don't think it's possible to be a believing Catholic and be a Democrat and really understand what the Democrat Party is all about. And I know that there are a lot of them. There are millions of them out there, but I don't understand what they think they're doing. I don't get it. And for people to say Marxism is charity. No, Marxism is the force of the state being used at the whim of an elite to redistribute, to take from you what is yours. You know, to take the wheat that you have gathered from your own field and give it to other people. And if you don't do it, they'll lock you in prison. That's Marxism. Marxism is not, oh, just give all to the poor and be nice to everybody. Mm-mm. No, that's not how it works. You know, if you want to be charitable, if you want to give as much as you want to give to people in need, God bless, go for it. Somebody else sticking a gun to your head saying you better give us this stuff or else, that's not charity. That's tyranny. And that's what Marxism is. That's what socialism is, and the Democrat Party's redistribution of wealth initiatives. That's what you're really talking about. It's not about being a good Catholic. But anyway, I don't want to get too far down that list. So I think this is strap in, folks. I didn't know this election could get any crazy. I really didn't. You figure you got in an election year like this, you have the pandemic, you have BLM, you got the economy in this precarious position, and now you're going to add this on top of things. And that's why you're going to see just so much overheated and stupid rhetoric. Be prepared for that. I mean, here's Amy Klobuchar taking a break from eating salads with a comb and throwing things at staffers who work for her. I still think the eating the salad with a comb thing is like, you brush your hair with a comb and you eat a salad with it. Here she is, play 18.
All rules will be looked at. Everything matters here. But, Dory, I cannot emphasize enough that there are 45 days before an election. And it remains what we said the morning yesterday when we had our first early voting in Minnesota, when we saw Joe Biden do a terrific job, by the way, in Duluth, is that what matters is everyone votes. And that we, the public's pressure on Republicans is, to me, the most important thing right now. The Republicans who basically stole that seat the last time, and now they're trying to do it again, and the public must speak out. This love for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in her own words, right? Her fervent wish is that the next president pick. That was the last thing she said to the public. That was it. And so I think that we not only respect the past, but we look to what she wanted in the future. And that's where we have to take our action.
Stole the seat. Stealing a seat. All right, let's unpack this, shall we? That's sitting U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar, who's a complete mediocrity. But unfortunately, if you're a Democrat mediocrity in a lot of flyover states, you're able to get elected because of the cities that will vote for you. And it's a shame. But stole the seat. How did they steal it last time with Merrick Garland? What was this? What was the theft there? Because Obama nominated Merrick Garland in an election year. In the Senate, Mitch McConnell said, sorry, we're not going to vote on it. But so the expectation was that that's what should happen. That was what Democrats were saying then. And you have all these clips now that are coming out of Democrats, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Democrats who were saying, no, no, in the past, you should be able to fill the seat. Historically speaking, the seat has been filled most of the time, almost all of the time in an election year. So what's really the difference now? The difference is that Democrats want something. And then all their analysis, all their legal theories are built around what do they want? Not what is true, what is right, what is just. It's what do they want? Like a baby that wants a toy. All that matters is the desire. The justification, the rationalization flows from the desire. There's no external argument to be made about why it's right, why it's fair. Steal the seat. How stealing implies the breaking of a rule or a law to take something. And it also implies someone had ownership of it. Who owned the seat that was supposed to go to America? Who was the owner of that? Well, you know, the answer is the American people. It's not owned by the previous occupant. It's not owned by a political party. So that's the wrong verbiage to use. But also in the mechanism then of keeping the seat open, how is it stolen? What rule were Senate Republicans breaking by not going forward with a confirmation vote of Merrick Garland? The answer is there's no rule that they broke. There's no law that they even came close to breaking. So what, I mean, this is, we're getting to the point now where they're going to say, you know, if Trump wins re-election, who cares who actually got more votes in the Electoral College? That's, we want something else. So that's all. They won't even make an argument. I mean, I know you got to start getting your mind in this place where you realize we're dealing with psychologically damaged people here. They can't understand living in a country where they're not getting the things that they want handed to them by a tight little circle of elites in power, that they'll do anything to keep them there. And then pretend that this is all about the will of the people and our, you know, beautiful republic and all the rest of it. You're seeing the Democrat Party exposed in a way that you should never forget.